This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given. October 1st will mark 2 years since a single gunman shot and killed 58 people at the Route 91 Harvest Music Festival in Las Vegas. More than 850 people were injured, nearly half from gunfire or shrapnel. The shootings occurred less than a week before the Las Vegas Golden Knights were to begin their inaugural season in the NHL. And in some ways, what happened next was a story of recovery, community, and hockey. Reporter Susan Vallett has our story. And just a note before we get started, this piece is going to contain descriptions of what it was like to be in the crowd during the shootings, as well as audio taken from YouTube videos and law enforcement recordings. Listener discretion is most definitely advised.
Sometimes you can find community in the least likely of places.
I had been here 10 years, and I had a pretty good grasp of Vegas, but even I underestimated how much togetherness and how much community there was here.
That's Jesse Granger, who covers Vegas hockey for the sports news website The Athletic. He was also among the first reporters on the scene of the Harvest Festival shooting.
Everyone outside of Vegas sees it as the Strip and hotels and clubs and all that and pools. Like, I feel like I didn't even give the city enough credit. And after that, it completely changed the way I viewed Vegas.
But for many in Vegas, the events of that day and the weeks and months after changed the way they looked at a sport. Hockey. 27-year-old Anthony Raboni grew up with the sport. His dad brought his love of the game with him from L.A.
He's always been a big Kings fan, so when we grew up, especially when we started playing hockey, we grew up watching the Kings play all the time. Luke Robitaille, all those guys. Our neighborhood was half the hockey community at the time, I felt like, because a lot of the kids that grew up in our little area are the ones who all went and started playing at the same time. But you go to school and tell people you played hockey, and they'd kind of give you a weird look.
Anthony's older brother, Nick, went to UNLV and played for the Rebels roller hockey team. Anthony joined him for the 2011-2012 season.
Even playing for UNLV, you know, for a long time, people would be like, oh, we have a hockey team? I'm like, yeah, we got a hockey team. Like, we're pretty decent.
A few years later, Nick signed on as a coach for UNLV's men's ice hockey team. Hockey was growing in Vegas.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
In June of 2016, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman announced that the Las Vegas Golden Knights were coming to town. Of course, hockey fans booed him.
No, no, keep the booing. That proves you're now an NHL city.
The NHL had arrived. For the Vegas hockey community, the excitement was like Christmas morning. But while the Golden Knights were preparing to play their first regular season game, Las Vegas was hosting the Route 91 Harvest Music Festival, a 3-day party featuring country artists in an open field at the south end of the Vegas Strip. Nick and Anthony and some of their childhood hockey friends decided to attend on Sunday, the final night of the festival.
So I went and played my men's league game on Sunday, like I always do, and then afterwards I actually zipped down there as fast as I could.
Anthony took the day off from his job as a paramedic, but he also had plans for before the concert.
Actually, I had actually skipped our Sunday night league game that night to go to the Golden Knights preseason game against the Sharks. So he went and played in our hockey game. I went to the Golden Knights game. The plan was to meet up around 8:30, 9 o'clock to catch the last two acts of the concert together. I was just lucky that we actually got to meet up because there's no real good cell service there, and it was kind of trying to figure out where everyone was at. By the time we all got together, it was the end of Jake Owen's set.
It was kind of like towards the end of the concert, obviously. Jake Owen was second to last to perform, and Jason Aldean was the last and final one. You just hear like two loud like bangs. It was like 1-2. And then it kind of stopped, and then you hear like a consistent barrage of what essentially is gunfire. Yes, you heard I was put on to. But at the time, you're never thinking like, okay, I'm getting shot at a concert. You know, we've definitely shot guns in our lives plenty of times, but I think it's different when you're hearing it from that, from how far that is. So you're still not really sure what it is. Maybe it's a blown speaker or something. And you crouch down, and everybody's crouching down, and then the music stops, and you're like, okay, something's up. And then it stopped for a second, and all of a sudden it goes again, and probably the second time around when it goes again.
Get down.
You know, I feel like somebody just smashes me in the chest with a sledgehammer. I crouch down and still not thinking I was shot with a bullet. But then blood started coming out of my nose and my mouth. And then I looked down and, you know, I got a hole in my chest. And my brother's there, thank God. And my buddy, our buddy Billy, who's also a paramedic.
I heard someone say I got hit. And I look over my right shoulder and I see my brother spitting up blood. And that kind of, you know, turned it into like, okay, we're getting shot at. And my brother's been shot and we got to get the hell out of here.
You know, they both grab me and, you know, we just start running just like everybody else starts running. And it's just chaos. You know, I got one hand around my brother, one hand around Billy. And, we, you know, we're running as fast as I can go, which isn't too fast.
And so we started heading east out of the concert venue. And at that point, I was like, oh, crap, Danielle.
That's Anthony's girlfriend who was with him at the concert.
And I looked up and luckily they were running right in front of us. And that's what I told our friend Emmanuel, who's he's in the Army. And I trusted him with her life, and I was just like, hey, man, you got to take her, go that way, go to the exit and get her out. So yeah, we ran outside the east gate of the concert venue. We saw where Nick was shot at that point. He didn't have an exit wound. He just kind of had an entrance right here above his left pec, right in the spot where your lung would be at. So that kind of got me nervous with his breathing and the blood coming out. So immediately I was like, all right, well, he needs to go to the hospital. It's the only thing that's going to save him.
You know, then we get to a cop car.
And we kind of placed Nick down behind the cop car. And I remember asking the cop, said, hey, man, we got to get my brother to hospital right now. He's been shot. And he's like, I can't do that. You know, I mean, he's hunkered down behind his car with his AR out.
Cops are, they're, you know, just as kind of shell-shocked as everyone. They're just telling people to run and get out, go this way or that way.
Get out of here. There's gunshots coming from over there. Go that way. Go that way.
I kind of realized, like, hey, we're on our own for this one. I looked at Billy and I said, hey, dude, we're going to steal this cop car. So we started wrenching on the door handle, and of course it's locked. And then a few yards down the way, another cop was like right down there looking at us trying to steal a cop car. So I asked him if he had a first aid kit. He had kind of like that Walmart first aid kit with Band-Aids and Neosporin in it. And we took the plastic off of it and made what's called like an occlusive dressing.
And then we ran further backwards onto a side street. And then that's when, you know, I was sitting down and we were waiting for ambulance to come.
Loads and loads of people who had been shot started to kind of flood to where we were at. And he was shot in the first minute, and it went on for about 10 to 12 minutes. So, I mean, a lot of people continued to get shot. And at that point, when Nick was kind of stable, Billy kind of was able to sit there and stay with Nick, keep an eye on Nick, and I just kind of started to see what other people I could help. Originally, my plan is, you know, that's my brother. He's getting on the first ambulance that shows up. Whereas that first ambulance is coming down the street, felt like a lifetime. Right as that's happening, a guy who had been shot in the neck and he's bleeding out pretty bad, I was like, that guy needs to get on this ambulance. And luckily I saw a couple ambulances coming behind that.
Nick got into the second ambulance.
I didn't even get to say bye to him. I mean, he was in the back of that ambulance and I was able to peek through that window and I saw him back there sitting on the bench seat. And I just saw the medic and I just said, hey, where are you going? He said, Sunrise. I said, perfect. And I mean, that was it. Like, that was all I could do. And I just prayed that wasn't the last time I saw him.
Anthony and Billy stayed behind as first responders, helping out at the scene for about an hour and a half.
At that point, we're like, okay, well, we need to find a way to get to the hospital. There's not going to be any Ubers or anything around here. Like, how the hell are we going to get back?
Anthony and Billy made their way to the Tropicana, where they were pushed inside as rumors swirled about more shooters.
Control 374, I got medics reporting that they're getting shot at in the Tropicana.
Anthony and Billy were moved into a hallway while police tried to figure out what was going on.
Control 656, we have reports of shots fired from the Tropicana Hotel.
D22, we are at the Tropicana. There is no shots fired here.
Finally, they said, hey, there's someone on the fifth floor who's been shot in the head. We need some people to come up there and help us. So I said, raised my hand right away. I said, Billy, let's go. This is our way out. The guy he'd been shot in the head, but it didn't really penetrate the skull or anything. It just kind of wrapped around his forehead. He was super lucky, but he still didn't go to the hospital. So we basically helped him down to the valet where an ambulance was at. I remember talking to the one EMT, and he said, oh, we're going to go to UMC. And I was like, oh. I was like, no, you're going to go Sunrise. I was like, and we're going to go with you.
The ambulance brought Anthony and Billy to the emergency room at Sunrise.
Basically, when we first got there, they said, hey, you can't come back here. You can't come back to the emergency room. I said, fair enough. And I walked down the waiting room, and that's where a lot of our family and friends were, so I got to give my mom and dad a hug and a kiss. And then I said, all right, well, I'm going to go find my brother.
Anthony had done some of his training at this hospital.
So I knew the door code, and I was able to kind of sneak into the emergency room. It was like a scene from, I don't know if you've ever seen Pearl Harbor, when they have the nurses running around when Pearl Harbor's being bombed and there's blood everywhere and doctors and nurses running everywhere and screaming, and it's like that.
Finally, Anthony found someone who knew where his brother was.
He was already intubated, and he was actually not doing very well at that point. I don't think he even knows how critical he was, but his blood pressure was about 70 over 40, which I don't know if you know how low that is, but that's a pretty bad sign. And I remember them kind of ripping in his chest, trying to get a chest tube in. And, you know, it's kind of sometimes where ignorance is bliss, but I wasn't ignorant because I work in that field. So I kind of knew where he was at, and it was a little frightening.
Anthony went back to the waiting room and sat with his family for 3 grueling hours.
You see families get called up, and then they go sit back down. Then you get another family get called up, and that whole family starts to break down and cry. And it's like, all right, well, their loved one passed. And they call another, and you're like, well, which one am I going to be?
But before his family's name was called, Anthony's phone rang. It was Nick's doctor, letting Anthony know that his brother was going to be okay. The bullet hadn't pierced Nick's lung, but doctors had to cut open Nick's rib cage to find the bullet, and there was a lot of internal damage. Nick had been put in a medically induced coma.
I was in the coma for essentially that night and all the next day because I couldn't breathe on my own. So they had that breathing tube in for like, you know, a day and a half. And then I woke up and it was like October 3rd.
Doctors told Nick that being in good shape, in part from playing hockey, had helped him survive the shooting.
You have like very mixed emotions because you don't know who's alive, who's dead. Like why it happened, what happened, and now I'm just seeing like newspaper articles with my face on it and name on it, you know, and I'm just like kind of like irritated because I just didn't want any of that. Like I just wanted to like figure out what happened and then just be alone for a little bit just to collect my thoughts and everything.
While Nick recovered in the hospital, the Vegas community rallied and the city's brand new NHL team joined in. Here's reporter Jesse Granger again.
I went with the Golden Knights players to Metro headquarters, where it was like 2 days after the shooting, and there were officers there that had been working nonstop since the shooting happened, and they're exhausted, and they've just been dealing with horrifying things for the last 2 days, and it just kind of lightened their day a little bit. These players had reached out to the team and said, like, what can we do? We'll do anything we possibly can. And this is the week before the regular season opener in Dallas. They're preparing for the first game in franchise history, and that was what they were doing that week.
Nick would stream his UNLV games from his hospital room, taking notes to give to the team. And his buddies came to watch the opening game of the inaugural Golden Knights season.
It was actually 1-0, and the Knights scored late to tie it up, really late.
And the first goal in Golden Knights history ties the game.
I was in that room with 7 or 8 guys that I grew up playing hockey with. And, you know, I'd watched tons of games with them in the past before, and we'd never all cheered when one team scored.
But this time, when the Knights scored, Nick says everyone in the hospital room cheered.
And I thought that was so strange. I just remember vividly looking around, and I was like, wow. They wanted to help this city heal, and I think they did it. It gave so many people to kind of something to cheer for, and it gave them a distraction from the hardships that everybody was still going through.
As victims were released from the hospital and life began to return to normal, Nick says the city stayed behind the Knights.
People really took grasp of the Knights, their style of play, which I think really embodies the city. It's very fast-paced, very hardworking, just like a lot of people in this city. So hockey truly brought everybody together at that time.
Jesse Granger saw the Knights' impact on the city too.
I think people, because of how screwed up our society is, people forget about tragedies too quickly and we move on to the next thing. Whereas the Golden Knights made Vegas Strong their calling card and their motto, and it ended up pulling the city together for a longer period of time, I think.
Nick Raboni was left with a scar right underneath where hockey players wear a captaincy, where doctors dug out the bullet and the shrapnel. Nick had to work on breathing and walking again. He fought to build back strength. And 7 months after he came out of a coma, Nick stepped on the ice for his first hockey game.
You don't sweat the small stuff as much. When things come up, you know, before I might get a little frustrated and take things to heart a little bit more. But now I definitely just realize that it's just, life is about the relationships you make with people, loving people, enjoying it to the best of your ability. Because when you're gone, the only thing people will remember is how you made them feel. And I realize now I catch myself a lot quicker trying to do that.
Every day, as he gets ready to head out, Nick looks at one particular letter that a family friend sent him during his recovery from the shooting. It's now up to you to take advantage of this gift, the second chance that was given to you that unfortunately 58 people will never know. Like a fortuitous bounce, God has put you in front of the net with a puck right in front of you. Don't let him down.
That's reporter Susan Ballett. Nick Raboni is starting his fourth season as a coach with the UNLV men's ice hockey team. The Las Vegas Golden Knights begin their third NHL season on Wednesday. You're listening to Only a Game from NPR.